Well, welcome, guys. We're starting late. They've got a whole bunch of material in here, so we're going to go really fast. And if you don't mind, I'd like to open in prayer. Adonai, our Father, we humbly come before thee, and we thank you for this wonderful day thou hast provided, and your festival, and all these people here, and the joy that you put in it for us. Pray that you'd be with us here today. Your spirit of understanding would be upon us, and it'd be thy words that we hear, and not our own. And we thank you for everything, Adonai, in the holy and precious name of thy son, Yeshua. Amen. All right, guys.
Can everybody hear okay?
Am I loud enough for everybody? Okay. Before we actually start, I'd like you to keep in mind one thing. Generally, the harder a prophetic verse is to understand, actually the more literal it really is. I'd like for all of you to kind of erase any previous Christian doctrine on prophecy we've heard. And simply take the scriptures and what they say in a very literal deal. Just look at them very simply with no other thought. What is the words actually saying? It's important that as closely as we can, we understand the mindset of the writer to see it as if he understood it. And to paraphrase Brad Scott, take out your Western Greek thinking and put in your cylindrical Hebrew 101 disc, okay? This is going to be on the Daniel timeline. And prophecy is very literal. For the most part, we should take it at face value. Isaiah 66:17. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the garden behind one tree, in the midst, eating swine flesh, the abomination, and the mouse, will be consumed together, saith the Lord. There's been a lot of studies on this, and, you know, this is hard to understand. What are we talking about? A mouse, a pig, and an abomination? We're going to eat it together? There's been lots of studies of prophetic meanings and such. And it's really not that complicated. Meat and viral pig. In Canada, a group called Forsberg and a team of researchers spliced a gene from E. coli and a bit of mouse DNA into a normal pig embryo. The result, a Yorkshire pig that produces an enzyme in its... Salivary gland, and that it can break down otherwise indigestible phosphorus. The EnviroPig's manure contains about 30 to 60% less phosphorus than its unmodified cousins. Made from a mouse DNA, genetic material from E. coli, which is grown and cultivated, well, let's just say from poop. Eating anything derived from poop could certainly be understood as an abomination. And obviously a swine embryo is coming to a supermarket near you. So this is the manner in which we should really understand prophecy. We may not understand it, we may try to put tags on it, but really if we just look at it for what it really says, we're better off. In light of all the commotion and interest in Daniel and the various dates that have been set, I thought it would be good to look at Daniel timeline from a purely scriptural view. We'll look at a few key words as they are in the original Hebrew, and we'll examine and test Daniel's timeline for its accuracy. First, I wish to apologize for any of my attempt at pronouncing Hebrew words. I'm kind of new at Hebrew. My wife says I sound like a redneck trying to pronounce it, and, well, she's probably true. I'm still learning. If they put out a C. Dick and Jane Run book about a second grade level, I can almost make it through it without a mistake now. So just bear with me on that if I pronounce them wrong. And we're also going to look at parts of Revelation to see how they line up in the Daniel timeline and whether they match. We'll not be setting any dates, as Daniel gives no dates in reference to his timeline. He only gives events in relation to the timeline. And I will attempt no speculation as to the interpretation of the events. We certainly may discuss them, but that's a whole other study in itself. We'll simply examine what Daniel tells us, and we'll lay it out in a chart to make it easier to understand. I've pored over countless studies on this subject, and unfortunately several dates have been set that have come to pass that have yet to be proven. But the mathematics are still the same. I didn't make this up. I have plagiarized the heck out of this. We went through tons and tons of studies. So I'm going to use the number 12. If we went through 12 studies and 9 of them agreed on it, that's what we used and gleaned. for the council of our elders. I'm going by. If three studies had something that nobody else did, we eliminated it. So we've put this together as a congregation. About 90% of it is all from other studies, so I don't want to take any credit for this. 119 has a good study on this. Drewy Burton has another very good study on this. And there's lots of other good studies on this, but I'd emphasize on focusing on the events that set this up and shy away from date starting. So let's get started on this. We got to start somewhere, so we put two lines out to the side. And if we look at Daniel 9:24, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy to anoint the most holy. So we establish a beginning point, which is the beginning point of the 70 years. And we know that this is 70 years because the word Shavuah means technically Shavuot, whatever that word is. You can, so we only have that once a year. So we know it's not weeks, it's years. And Shavuim simply means 70, so we have 70 years. It ends at to seal up the vision and the prophecy and anoint the most holy, and then we begin the millennial reign. That second one, yes. Okay. So if we go to Daniel 9:25, next verse, know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the prince shall be 7 weeks, 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublous times. Note that the beginning of Daniel's timeline by Scripture starts when the command to restore Jerusalem unto the Messiah goes forth. Not to be confused with Israel being reborn into a nation, which is an interpretation of Matthew 24 on the fig tree budding. We just read Daniel 9:25, so we know the beginning point is the command to restore Jerusalem. A score is 20 years. So 60 is 60, plus 2 weeks is 62, plus 7 weeks is 69. So this is how we've determined where we go here. Once again, we kind of wanted that, if you guys can read along with some of that. I'll try and read what I can, but I'm trying to push through because we started late and I got way too much material. Shuab means to turn back, to cause, to return, to be returned, to be restored, to be brought back. Banah simply means to rebuild. And if we look at 9:25, where restore and rebuild, they're rebuilding. It was there, they're putting it back. In Matthew 24, where Yeshua is stating that, verse 32, now let the fig tree teach you its lesson. When the branches begin to sprout and leaves appear, you know that summer is approaching. I believe this is really a quite literal translation. Many have translated this to when Israel is born into a nation again, due to Israel being related to the fig tree. But it's referred to the olive tree many, many more times than the fig tree. So, put that for what it may. Everybody can look at that as they wish. And this is a Hebrew newspaper image in 1948 in Jerusalem Post announcing Israel's independence. So we established the 69-year point, and we know that it's 70 years. Daniel 9:26 says, after 62 years, the Messiah is cut off. The people of the prince, which most of us assume to be the Antichrist, shall destroy the city, Jerusalem, and the sanctuary with a flood and unto the war of desolations. I believe this is a direct correlation to Revelation 12:15, which gives us further clues to the beginning and ending of the timeline. So as Daniel describes it now, it should look like this. We have the 62 years, 69 years, and 70 years. And they're all from the same starting point. Revelation 12:14. And the woman was given wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time, times and a half from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And Hosea 14, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. And I will give her vineyards from thence and the valley of Achor for a door of hope. And she shall sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the days when she came out of the land of Egypt. If you notice the similarities between Revelation 12:14 and Hosea 2:14 and Daniel 9:26. Now, as we see these next verses, this is referring to the events in the second half of the tribulation. The valley of Achor mentioned in Hosea is actually located in the area of Petra, Jordan. So many feel this is where and why it applies to in when you see the abomination happen. Those in Judea will flee to the hills. So we've established the 7 years, which have established 69, as Daniel said it, in 62. In Daniel 9:26, after 80 years, the Messiah were to be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince shall come and destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be a flood, and unto the end of the wars desolations are determined. Does everybody understand how we got here? How we arrive at the 70 weeks, the 69, and the 62? So we're going to focus on the 7 year. Oops. We're going to focus on the 7 year period. So if we start in the next verse, Daniel 9:27, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease. For the overspreading of abomination he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be, that the determined shall be poured upon the desolate. So we know that the beginning of the 7 years, what we're looking for, the beginning of the 7 year tribulation, according to Daniel, is he shall confirm a covenant with many. He's not making a covenant. He's not doing a new peace treaty. He's confirming something that's already existed. Another point of looking at in the beginning of the 7 year tribulation is the confirming of the covenant with many. According to Daniel 9:27, the event we can attach to the beginning of the 7 year tribulation is confirming the covenant with many. As we know, the tribulation is divided two halves by the in the midst of the week. So let's look closer at the words covenant and confirm. This is also key to understanding that the desolation that makes desolate. The Hebrew words translated to abomination is shekuts, usually associated with filthiness and idols. The point to take a note here is it's a thing, not necessarily a person. The he that he's talking about in Daniel 9:27 is found in 9:26. It's the prince who comes to destroy the city. That's the one who will confirm a covenant with many. Shamem, the word used for desolation, is shamamim. And according to Jeff Benner's ancient Hebrew lexicon, it is derived from the root word shamam, meaning desolate, in the sense of a dry wind blowing over land, drying it out. The plural form of this word would also be shamayim. And if we look in to see how the Bible uses this, we look in Acts 1:20. Now, said Kepha, it is written in the book of Psalms, let his estate become desolate, let there be no one to live in it, and let someone also take his place as a supervisor. Matthew 23:38. Look, God is abandoning you to your house, leaving it desolate. Zechariah 7:14, but with the power of the world, when I will disperse among them all the nations which they have not known, thus the land will be desolate after them, so that no one came or went. They had turned a pleasant land into the desert. So we need to understand what the word desolate means. And as you can see by the example verses, it's given that desolate generally refers to a place or the land being devoid of the Holy Spirit, people, or vegetation. And I believe that Daniel's telling us that the abomination that makes desolation means the land will be ruined and removed of all his people, which would make sense in conjunction with those leaving Judea and heading for the hills. Abomination is from the Hebrew term shekutz, and it's hard to explain this one. There's no short explanation for abomination. The Hebrew word we have has three forms and uses of this word. We're going to focus on the shekutz used in Daniel. The next verse, examples in the New Testament, will also refer to Daniel's vision. The excerpt is generally that of which is contrary to what Adonai sees as acceptable. Other uses of the words are in contrast to idolatry and then to sexual deviation. The Greek uses one word to describe all three. So when we're studying the New Testament, one has to look at the word in context of being used and then reference the Tanakh to the verses that are also applicable. So if you find this word, and if you guys have a lexicon, an ISA is a great one. Anytime you find a Greek word that gives one meaning, you can go back and see what that Greek word was translated from Hebrew to and how many times it was, and you can get a general context of what it really meant in the Hebrew sense versus the Greek. So in short term, what the Hebraic understanding of abomination is simply that which is contrary to Yahweh's laws. And let's look at what the abomination of desolation is scripturally. Daniel 9:27, he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. The overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. Daniel 12:11, from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Excuse me. Matthew 24:15, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever read it, let him understand. Mark 13:14, when ye shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not be, let the reader understand, then let them in Judea flee to the mountains. And Luke 21:20, and I was really impressed because I've read this 1,000 times and I'd never seen it. When ye shall see Jerusalem encompassed with the armies, you know that the desolation thereof is nigh. So I'm hoping you're seeing this as I'm seeing this. The event that we as believers should watch for is when the pagan armies surround or encompass Jerusalem. Whether we understand or know or agree on what the abomination of desolation is or not, Luke flat puts it out. He doesn't mess around. He says we watch for the armies to encompass Jerusalem. Whether that's the abomination or whether that's the abomination to come, it's what we can see as a single event to know that we've arrived there. Consequently, take note of all the verses refer passively to the city of Jerusalem. Not a temple and desolate refers predominantly to the land or house. Our Messiah says where it ought not be or stand in a holy place. And the writer of Luke simply states it as what those of that time knew. The writer Luke simply states that the abomination that desolates is. It's not hard to figure an army sweeping across the city is going to make it devoid of most life. I don't know if that's the abomination, and I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm just saying, according to Luke, this is what we watch for. This will be when the armies encompass. That's when those in Judea will flee to the hills. 2 Thessalonians 2:4, who opposeth and exalted himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God, which is one that everybody uses to say, oh, we must have a third temple. The temple has to be built before Yeshua can return. It's not true. It's not referring to the same subject matter as the above verses. The Antichrist does not have to seat himself in the Holy of Holies to fulfill the 3.5-year mark. The third temple does not have to be built to fulfill this prophecy. Because they said, let him stand in a place he ought not be. Doesn't necessarily mean temple. Standing on holy ground would be enough to fulfill this scripture. All right, Daniel 9:27, he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And we already know what the a week means. It's used the word Shavuah, and it means one Shavuot, so it's 1 year. I just misspoke. Hang on. Let me just read it like I got it. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice, the oblation, to cease. For the overspreading of abomination, it shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation, the term may be poured out of bomb. If we look at all the words used in here, confirm is gabar. Bereath, as we know it, is what most of the covenants referred to in the Old Testament. But it's generically, it's a pact, a compact, a covenant. It's between men, a treaty, alliance, or league. It's a verb, and it does not have to be in writing. It can be spoken. Most of that, I'll let kind of you guys read. Most of that is because I'm trying to hustle through this. But if we break it down, it says exactly what it says in the English. It's a good translation. So we're going to focus half on the second half of the tribulation now. We know where it starts. We know where the second half starts. First, we have two events, not one. The taking away of the daily sacrifices and the abomination of desolation. They're not the same thing. If we go back for a type and shadow, when during the whole story of the Maccabees, when the Romans destroyed the temple, what the abomination was, according to Josephus, was when they stuck the statue of Zeus in the temple. That was enough for that would be. 30 days later is when they sacrificed the pigs and put the pig blood on it. So as he speaks, the actual, that is an abomination, but the first abomination, it was two events. The first one was a statue. The second one was the smearing of the swine blood. So we have to determine the time between the two events. We are now working in days. A Hebrew year is 360 days. So a seasons and seasons and a half, or time referred to in Revelation 12:14, is 360 times 3. Which is 180 days plus 1,080 days plus 180 days equals 1,260 days. And I kind of jumped ahead, so that's going to be on the next slide. But Daniel tells us to establish a 1,290-day mark and a 1,335-day mark. And as the arm shall stand on his part, they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and he shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that makes it desolate. From Daniel 12:11. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, the abomination that makes desolation set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335-day mark. But thou, go thou thy way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and to stand in thy lot at the end of days. Does everybody understand how we got those two marks? I mean, those marks are just pretty plain. He sets it straight out. The idea of putting it on a graph is so that we can actually physically see it instead of remembering it. So in my dyslexic mind, I finally put the 1,260-day mark up there. which correlates with Matthew 24. Note that Yeshua only mentions the abomination of desolation as the single event that should signal Judea's flight into the wilderness. Revelation 12:6 verifies that our 1,260 days for those who believe in the commands of Adonai and have the faith of Yeshua, the woman, in Revelation 12:17, will flee to the wilderness. So we now have established our timeline between the events is 30 days. If we go back to Matthew 24:15, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand, let them which Judea flee to the hills. And Revelation 12:6, and the woman fled in the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days, or 1,260 days. The two tie together. There's actually more verses in here, but the time allotted, I'm just trying to pick the highlights and go with them. Note the time difference at the end. Time difference of 45 days towards the end, which fulfills the cometh quickly. Revelation 11:14. The second woe is past, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly. And the seventh angel sounded, and there are great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our Lord and of His Christ, and He shall reign forever and ever. We haven't explained the trumpets yet, but you know that the seventh trumpet is put very plainly. The seventh trumpet sounds, second coming of Yeshua is here. That's a gimme, that's not debated much. So we have all these days up here. And if we go back to Revelation 11, 2 and 3, but the court which is without the temple leave out, and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles. And the holy city shall tread under it for 40 foot for 42 months. In Ezekiel 42, I don't know why I put 42 in there, but third verse, I will give the power unto my two witnesses that they shall prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. So if we, these are all fitting in the time that from the beginning and the end. I'm getting confused, pardon me. If we take those two verses and put them in the timeline, they fit the same time the people in Judea flee, the two witnesses pop up. They're making it desolate, which means God's people is left, which would be true. This would be under the underfoot of the Gentiles because it's been conquered or made desolate. The two witnesses rise for the same amount of time. Are you guys seeing the correlation? Because I realize I'm not explaining this real well. Revelation 2:3 reinforces the 7-year timeline of Daniel, as for the 3.5 years of the court is given over to the Gentiles. This is interesting. Netanyahu signed an agreement with the Vatican in March 2013, giving them sovereign authority over the second floor of the building they claim the Last Supper was held. Something interesting to note here is the Orthodox Jews are in the first floor of this building. The Catholic Church is now in the second floor, and the Muslims are on the third floor. Now, this building claims to be over the parts of King David's city. It's technically standing on holy ground. And I'm not going to be interpreting any specific meaning here. I'm just saying this all sounds like very important happenings, and we should watch for any events which may unfold in the Gentiles trampling the outer courts. Keeping in mind, Gentiles simply means those out of covenant. If we connect the army surrounding Jerusalem and then the conquering of Jerusalem causing the desolation, then the phrase, they shall tread on it for 42 months, makes a lot of sense. With a Hebrew month being 30 days, this comes out to 1,260 days. Revelations 12, 3 tells us that again, after the abomination takes place, the two witnesses will have the power to witness for 1,260 days. So are you still following me on how we get here? We also have a 3.5-day marker in which the two witnesses that lie dead before they are raised up to the heavens. And I believe this is significant due to the similarities in the 7 trumpets in Revelation. The events or catastrophes mentioned line up exactly with the 6th seal, Revelation 11:13. And at the same hour, there was a great earthquake, and a 10th part of the city fell, and the earthquake were slain of men for 7,000, and the remnant were affrighted and gave glory to the God of heaven. Revelation 11:11. And after 3 days and a half, the Spirit of life from God entered into them, and they stood on their feet. Great fear fell upon them which saw them, and they heard a great voice from the heaven saying unto them, Come up hither. And they ascended into heaven in a cloud, and their enemies beheld them. Which obviously this is going to be the Gentiles treading over the courts in there. So a lot of this, I'm going to skip some of this for the time frame, but if you watch and read Revelations, you'll see that's almost word for word on the events happening on the 3 woes, which is the 5th, 6th, and 7th trumpets in Jerusalem. Okay, we're gonna get back to that. If you read the 6th trumpet with 200,000 horsemen, a third of men killed by smoke, fire, and brimstone from their mouths, 4 angels loosed. That's the 2nd woe. The 5th star with the key to the bottomless pit is open to make smoke, locusts, and scorpions. 5 months to torment men without God's seal. The 7th trumpet we know is the 3rd woe, and it's the return of Yeshua. The 4th trumpet, a third of the sun, moon, and stars are darkened, night and day are shortened, angels cry, and that is the 3rd woe. And I'm going to go back and show you in a minute how those line up. So as we know, Yeshua returns as a conquering king at the 7th trumpet. The 7th trumpet, without a doubt, heralds the second coming of Yeshua. Most of us were previously led the events of Revelation were in the order of seals, trumpets, thunders, and bowls. But the bowls of wrath, or vials, depending on your translation, and the thunders occur between the 6th and 7th trumpet. I'll speculate a little here, as I can find no verses to substantiate the following statement in exact wording. But Yeshua comes back as the conquering king and defeats all those brought up against Israel in the valley of Hamagido, which is Armageddon as we know it. The blood from the horrific slaughter will be bridle high to a horse. It's going to take quite a while to clean up, which is what I believe may account for the year difference between the millennium reign starting and Yeshua's return. I would love to see somebody do a topic on that. That's got to be a great study, and it has to be in the scriptures somewhere. There may be more to the prophecies in the Tanakh. Again, a whole other study. The Battle of Armageddon actually is a description of the place where the armies of the world will be gathered in Revelation 16:16. And there are 2 battles referred to that we commonly confuse. The one in which our Messiah reconquers Jerusalem for his glory at his second coming, and the Battle of Gog and Magog, which is at the end of the millennial reign. Jeremiah 51:6, Flee out of the midst of Babylon and deliver every man his soul. Be not cut off in her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance, and he will render her a recompense. Revelation 18:14, Then I heard another voice out of the heaven saying, People, come out of her, so you will not share in her sins, so that you will be not infected by her plagues. One other thing I'd kind of like to note that I believe is very important for us to know is the scriptures are very specific on when the abomination desolation takes place, and is when those in Judea are to head for the wilderness. Most of what I've seen and heard was this was also when the house of Israel, Ephraim, or all the believers, are also to head for the wilderness. I'm not sure this is absolutely true for those of us not in Judea. We live in a different land. Some refer to it as the spiritual Babylon at this point. And the scriptures gives us an order of events that will happen, but it does not, that I'm aware of, give us a timeline to look for. It tells us what will happen to Babylon. Revelation is full of the horrible things that are going to occur in the land, but it gives us events, but no timeline between them like Daniel does. So I don't know that we in this country are going to wait for Judea to flee to the hills. We may have to go before, we may go after. If we look at an example, it says come out of Babylon because he will destroy her. If we look at Sodom and Gomorrah, he destroyed the cities. He did not destroy the countryside. So maybe that's a saving grace for some of us. And those in the city of Babylon will be destroyed in a single day. And I also believe the punishment of Babylon's sins will be in the wilderness, that we will be in the wilderness before the abomination desolation takes place. So it's just kind of a word to study that carefully. There's many, many opinions on it. And basically, as we established before, Amos 3:7, Adonai, God does nothing without revealing his plan to his servants and the prophets. So anything in Revelation that he gave the vision to John is still in the Old Testament, if we can search it out and find it. Isaiah 46:9, remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is no one else. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient time the things that are not yet done, saying my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. And Ecclesiastic 1:9, which has been is what it will be. That which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. We have the answers, we just have to know the scriptures to find them. We'll kind of go over these real quick. Everybody kind of watch them up on the screen. The seven seals are opened first, with the first four being horse and riders. The fifth seal is the martyrs, given white robes and told to rest from underneath the altar. The first five seals can be considered spiritual happenings or viewed as natural occurrences of our actions. Meaning, men are not going to take these as God throwing lightning bolts and causing all this. They're going to write it off to natural occurrences, to the climate melting or whatever. We're not going to see it yet, and those who don't know Scripture definitely will not see it. But with the opening of the sixth seal, we should be starting to recognize these worldwide events as the hand of Yahweh. Or at least those who believe in the commands of Yahweh and have the faith of Yeshua, Revelation 12:17. Those who study His Word should begin to recognize the signs. And as a note to study for, I believe the first four seals will be the judgment of the whole house of Israel. His believers, or as Revelation 12:14 puts it, those who follow His commands and His Son. Elohim always says He will judge His house first. So this has to take in play. 1 Peter 4:17, for the time has come that judgments begin at the house of God, and it begins at first with us. What shall the end of them that obey not the gospel of God? This is the seven trumpets and their events. We're not going to get into these in depth, but I want everybody to be aware of them and their order, as it's relevant to Daniel's timeline as well as other prophecies. We're going to compare some of the prophecies and revelations to each other, and I believe most of you will find it pretty interesting. Mountain in prophecy predominantly means a kingdom, nation, or a specific governmental system. With the events happening in Japan, would it be possible with the extreme nuclear happenings going on and what it is doing to the ocean, would eventually by an earthquake or the soil liquefaction factor that's going into it fall into the sea be a possible scenario for the second shofar? That's going on now. The first seal is the white horse and sent to conquer with a bow and a crown. The first shofar is hail and fire mingled with blood, and a third of all grass and trees are burned up. The first bowl is a physical affliction on the people with the mark of the beast. There doesn't seem to be much similarities, but I want you to look closely at the word used for conquer in the Greek. It's nikah. Strong's word 3528, it means to subdue literally or figuratively. King James translates it to the conquer, overcome, prevail, or get the victory. If we look at this as conquering, it is actually subduing mankind. What a better way to produce confusion, hunger, and pain. A third of all grass and trees burning up is definitely going to affect the farm regions, crop failures producing massive food shortages, which is a prerequisite to the second seal. Massive physical afflictions such as a worldwide epidemic of boils is sure to subdue large numbers of peoples. And if you can see where I'm going with this, there's kind of a thought pattern. All of this correlates and mixes with each other. We're going to kind of go somewhere else quick so that I can get, we can show you where they set up. Most of this I took out of is just simply word for word in Revelations. If you sit down and read the seals, what I'm wanting you to, what I'm wanting you to see is that many of them are the same. We've been taught that the seven trumpets come first, then the seven bowls. John was told of the seven thunders, but not to write about them. They may run concurrently, and I'm not saying they are, but I want you to look at this. And let me get to where I want to go. One thing to note in Revelation 6:12, is that where I'm at? No. Revelation 6:12. Then I watched as he broke forth the sixth seal, and there became a great earthquake. The sun turned black as sackcloth, one morning, and in the full moon became blood red. The stars fell from the earth, just as a fig tree drops its figs, and shaken by a strong wind. The sky receded like a scroll being rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place. Then the earth's kings, rulers, and generals, the rich and the mighty, indeed everyone, slave and free, hid himself in the caves among the rocks and the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the face of the one sitting on the throne, from the fury of the Lamb, for the great day of fury has come, and who can stand?" The sixth angel sounds his shofar, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the gold altar before God, saying to the sixth angel, the one with the shofar, "Release the four angels that are bound in the great river Euphrates." And they were released. These four angels had been kept ready for this moment, for this day, and a month and a year to kill a third of mankind. And the number of the cavalry soldiers was 200 million. I heard that number. This is how the horses looked in the vision. Riders had breastplates that were fire red, iris blue, and sulfur yellow. The horses' heads were like lions' heads, and from their mouths issued fire, smoke, and sulfur. It was these three plagues that killed a third of mankind: the fire, the smoke, and the sulfur issuing from the horses' mouth. For the power of the horses was given in their mouths, and also in their tails, for their tails were like snakes with heads, and with them they would cause. The sixth angel poured out his bowl upon the great river Euphrates, and its water dried up, in order to prepare the way for the kings from the east. And when I saw three unclean spirits that looked like frogs, they came out of the mouth of the dragon, from the mouth of the beast, and from the mouth of the false prophet. They are miracle-working demon spirits which go out to the kings of the whole inhabited world to assemble them for the war of the great day of Adonai. You have three unclean spirits, you have three ways of doing mankind. It's all kind of pulling together and meaning the same thing. They're simply looking at it. It's the same thing as you all heard the story of putting a rock in the middle of a room, putting people around it, a big piece of granite, and then having everybody describe it. Everybody's describing the same thing, but they all have a little bit different perspective on how they see it. Chapter 7 is just describes the spiritual happenings in heaven as the physical happenings on the earth occur. The 144,000 are chosen, and note there is 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes. those martyred for Yeshua's sake during the great persecution are given white robes and they're praising Yahweh. 10 is pretty self-explanatory, with special note on that this is where the seven thunders are told to Daniel, and he's not to write them down. But they happen, according to Revelation, in between the sixth and seventh trumpet. When the Lamb broke the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven, what seemed to be like a half hour. Then I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and they were given seven shofars. Another angel came and stood at the altar with a gold incense bowl, and he was given a large quantity of incense to add to the prayers of all God's people. And on the gold altar in front of the throne, the smoke and the incense went up with the prayers of God's people from the hand of the angel before God. Then the angel took the incense bowl, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it down into earth. And there followed peals of thunder, voices, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. Now the seven angels with the seven shofars began to sound them. Revelation 11:15, the seventh angel sounded his shofar, and there were loud voices in heaven, saying, "The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Lord and his Messiah, and he will rule forever." 11:19, then the temple of God in heaven was opened, and the Ark of Covenant was seen in his temple. And there were flashes of lightning, voices, peals of thunder, an earthquake, and violent hail. Revelation 16:17, the seventh one poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple from the throne, saying, "It is done." There were flashes of lightning, voices, peals of thunder, and there was a massive earthquake such as never occurred since mankind has been on earth. So violent was this earthquake. It's pretty obvious to see the exact same plagues are happening in each of the seventh seal, the shofar, and the bowl. So as we can see, two ways to look at understanding these plagues, they seem to be running concurrently, ending with all three sevens happening at once. Or if they're running consecutively, then with each pattern repeating itself, increasing in power and time. But it's almost a gimme that the seventh shofar and the seventh bowl happen together. Are you guys seeing that too? I mean, it's the exact same wording. Whether it does is something to pay attention to. I just wanted you to note that they look the same. They may not be running seven sevens and sevens. All these may be running at the same time. We're going to get up here. Oops. Who? I'm sorry? So realizing, and I apologize, I got started late and I crammed too much stuff in here, so is why we missed a lot of revelations, but it's really easy and it's simply worded in there. If you read it on your own time and keep in context with what's said here, I think you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So at this point, this is what we have laid out according to what the scriptures have told us using the events the scriptures described without dates. The timeline starts at the command to restore Jerusalem. It ends at the beginning of the millennium rest. The seven-year tribulation begins when the Antichrist confirms a covenant with many and ends with our Messiah placing his feet on the Mount of Olives. We have 1 year to do what is necessary to set up Yahweh's kingdom on earth under the command of our King Yeshua. And by simply the events that we know where the seventh shofar is and what happens at the two witnesses when they are raised back into heaven, we know where the sixth and seventh trumpets go. Seventh one obviously being at his return. The sixth one fits in Daniel. And Revelation fits word for word when the two prophets are raised for the dead. Now if we go back to the fifth trumpet, it tells us that it will be X amount of days there that they'll be able to torment men. So if we count that back, in Hebrew days, it goes 1,110 days. They shall have the power to sting and torment men without killing them. So if we back that up from the sixth trumpet, we know approximately it's going to land somewhere about the two-thirds point of the 1,260 days. I believe if somebody would study this out far enough that you could place all the trumpets right here on Daniel's timeline. But there's going to have more verses and more proof because we are a scripture-based people. If you can't put a verse out there, don't put it on there. So I only put three, the three that I could find and prove through verses where they would go. What are we looking at on time? Are we? 11:42, so I got 3 minutes. We're going to fly over these really quick. Other considerations. There is the creation week, if you've heard it about. Everybody's pretty familiar with that. 6 days and the seventh day we rest. Each day is 1,000 years. Isaiah 46:9. Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning shall be the ancient times that are not yet done. My counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. So everything ties into itself. The 7 days creation, the 6 days rest. If we look at what he told Moses in 6:3, and the Lord said, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, but he is also flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. If you look at the 120 years and put that in Jubilee years, you can see they fit and they run perfectly. It's just something to consider, because as you study when those come up, if we understand this, the way they align, we can understand where we're placing some of this stuff. But I thought that was extremely interesting, putting it in the Jubilee years. One of the big things coming up, and I don't know how many of you guys have heard of this or not, is the blood moon tetrads. And a blood moon tetrad is four blood moons in a row with no partial blood moons in between. And these have occurred or will occur on the above dates. There have been 13 tetrads over the last 500 years. These are the only ones to fall on exact feast days, noting the major events concerning Israel that happened within those years. We also need to take a huge interest in the up-and-coming tetrads in 2014 and 15, as the only time in recorded history that there is equally spaced full solar eclipses in between the lunar eclipses. If you haven't seen Mark Blitz's Signs in the Heavens, I would highly suggest take the time to review this one. Google El Shaddai Ministries and you'll find it. And I believe these fit the perfect things. What we're told, look for the signs and times in the sky. If you go back to the last three times it happened, they happened in 67 and 68. The blood moon happens on Passover. The second one of that year happens on Sukkot. There's no partials in between. The next year it happens the same. And as we know from 67 and 68, we had the Six-Day War where Jerusalem was recaptured. The same thing with 1948 when it was reborn into a nation. We had the same pattern, the four blood moon tetrads, right in a row with no partials. It's going to happen again in 2014 and 15. It's going to happen on the Jewish Passover of April 15, 2014. It's going to happen on the Feast of Tabernacles. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. It's going to happen again on the Feast of Tabernacles. In between that, and it's going to be on the new year, March 20th, 2015, we're going to have a full solar eclipse. And then we're going to have on April, Passover again, we're going to have another blood red moon. And then on the Feast of Trumpets, we're going to have a full solar eclipse. And then once again on Sukkot, we have a blood moon. This is going to be important to watch for. I don't know how signs in the sky can get any more prevalent than that. According to Hosea, it will be 2000. Now, a lot of people say Daniel's happened before, and it hasn't, and we'll cover that. And according to Hosea, it'll be 2,000 years before he returns. So this couldn't have been fulfilled in those days. Solomon's temple was destroyed in 586 B.C. The second temple was consecrated in 516 B.C. It's a difference of 70 years. A lot of the same events correlated. Yeshua was born in 0 B.C., and the Romans destroyed the temple in 70 A.D., which, once again, is we're seeing a 70-year pattern. We won't cover this material, but the point I want you to note is the 70-year cycle has been repeated in history before. There was one time that many scholars who promoted the idea that Daniel's timeline had already been fulfilled. I would venture to say this is simply a cycle or pattern, and it was repeated for our understanding. Hosea, come and let us return unto the Lord, for he hath torn and he will heal us. He has smitten and he will bind us. And after 2 days he will revive us. And in the third day he will raise us up. And we shall live in his sight. Then we shall know it. If we follow on to know the Lord is going forth, is prepared in the morning, and he shall come unto us and rain and as the latter rain and the former rain of earth. So he's telling you right there, the early rain and the late rain, just like in the Shema. It relates to Yeshua's first coming and his second coming. Now this one is killer. I love this. I'm not making any statements. I'm not saying Obama is the Antichrist. Don't misinterpret me. But I find this interesting. If we go back and we realize, he shall confirm a covenant with many. When Obama went to Israel in March, actually he went Nisan Tish, showed up the same day as Yeshua, during Passover, this is what the banners all across Jerusalem and Israel to meet him. And it was Brit Anamin. Now, I could not find Anamin in the Bible, but it is a relatively modern word that is not located in scriptures that I could find. But its modern day meaning is peoples, many peoples, or city of peoples. And of course, the Brit is a covenant, spoken or written. So he shall confirm a covenant with many. This is what Israel put as his official banners, a covenant of many. I'm not, like I said, I'm not saying anything. It's just the closest thing we've seen to this. It's worth noting. And I do not believe Obama's the Antichrist, but I'm not sure he'd be a front runner for that title, but it does seem somewhat suspicious in his actions. When consequences start lining up in a straight row, we have to take notice. And consequently, I put this one up here because nobody in America has ever seen him put his hand over his heart. Let me skip that. Yeah, I guess that's it. And just to end this, Luke 21:25, Joel 2:3, and Acts 2:9. And as we know, the times of the Modian are set by the movement of the celestial bodies, and many prophecy verses, as well as our Messiah, tell us what we're to watch for in the heavens and the skies. I apologize it was so rushed, and I apologize we had to skip some material. Has anybody got any questions?